Shalom. This is Avraham ben Yaakov in the holy city of Yerushalayim with the Zamra's Class 8 in our series on the laws of Shabbat based on the work Kitzur Hilchot Shabbat, The Concise Laws of Shabbat by Rabbi Yaakov Yecheskel Posen, Dayan of Congregation Kahal Adat Yishurun, Manhattan, New York. And we now continue with Chapter 5 of this work, which serves as a general introduction to the 39 forbidden labors of Shabbat. And we have learned in the previous class that the Torah specifically prohibits those kinds of labor, melacha, that are defined as being melechet machshevet, a labor that is intentionally carried out for a particular purpose in the way that the labor was carried out in the construction of the sanctuary that the children of Israel built in the wilderness. And now we'll continue in section 7 of chapter 5 of Kitzur Hilchot Shabbat with the qualifications to the concept of melechet machshevet, intentional labor. And among the requirements for a labor to classify as being melechet machshevet, an intentional act of labor, is that the labor must be carried out in the way that it was carried out in the construction of the sanctuary. In other words, in the normal way that that act of labor would be carried out on a weekday. For most certainly in the sanctuary, they did not change the way that they carried out the acts of labor when they were constructing the sanctuary from the way that people normally carry out those acts of labor. But if the person does not perform the melacha in the normal way that that act of labor would be carried out on one of the weekdays, for example, if the person perform the act of labor backhandedly or with some kind of change to the normal way, the person would be exempt from the penalty of having to bring a sin offering if the act was carried out unwittingly, or exempt from the penalty of stoning if the act was carried out flagrantly. Now, an example of carrying out one of the forbidden labors backhandedly, the Hebrew expression is kil'achar yad, with the back of the hand, would be if somebody carries out some item from the private domain, from inside a house or some other private domain, into the public domain, the street, on the Shabbat in a manner that is not the normal way of carrying out such an item. For example, the normal way to carry out most items would be in one's hand. And to carry something out in one's mouth that is not normally carried in the mouth, then a person who did that on the Shabbat, they carried out in their mouth a fork or a spoon or some other item across from inside the house, the private domain, out into the street. Even though the effect of their carrying out the item has been the same as if they carried out in their hand, that the item has changed its status, it's moved from being in a private domain out to being in the public domain, the person is technically exempt from the liability for having carried out a forbidden act of labor because the person did not carry out the object in the normal way of carrying it. They did so backhandedly. Another example would be in the labor of mixing a dough. Mixing a dough, adding liquids to flour, is one of the 39 forbidden labors of Shabbat. The making of dough was necessary for the making of the temple showbread. And the normal way to make a dough would be to pour in the liquid and to begin mixing. And for most people, the normal way of mixing the dough in the bowl would be to bring the the spoon round and around the bowl in order to mix the liquid in with the flour. That would be the normal way to do it. And it would be highly unusual for a person to take their spoon and to move it from one side of the bowl to the other through the middle, and then to change direction to move it from another side of the bowl across the middle to the other side of the bowl in a crosswise motion. This would be a shinui, a change from the normal way of mixing in the liquids into the flour, which would be by taking the spoon around and around the bowl. So if a person did mix liquids into flour in a bowl in this unusual way of going crosswise from side to side instead of round and around, that is a shinui, a change, which results in the act of labor not being considered to be technically one of the 39 forbidden kinds of labor that carry with the Tara penalties. Now, there are times when performing an act of labor in such a backhanded way carries with it still a prohibition instituted by the rabbis. Even though the performance of the labor would not carry a penalty from the Torah for transgression of the prohibition, the rabbis in many cases did prohibit doing various kinds of labors in a backhanded way, in a different way from normal. There are other occasions where such backhanded ways of carrying out labors are permitted, and we shall be touching on the details in the ensuing sections of this book. Now, sometimes a person may do an act that is an act of labor that comes under the category of the 39 kinds of forbidden labors of Shabbat, but the effect of their action, their labor, is not to produce anything constructive. On the contrary, they spoil something. They ruin something. Now, for an act of labor to qualify as being melechet machshevet, an intentional kind of labor, it is necessary for some positive repair, some creative change that is positive to come about through the labor in order for it to qualify as intentional labor. But if the person simply spoils or ruins something through their act of labor, that is not called active labor in the full sense of the word, and the person would normally be exempt from any liability for doing such an action. For example, if a person ripped a garment, not because they were angry, but they ripped the garment to shreds without having any intention of using those shreds for any purpose. If a person ripped the garment out of anger, then the ripping of the garment may qualify as a forbidden labor because they're attaining a certain intention through the ripping of the garment. They are assuaging their anger. Likewise, if a person were to rip cloth in order to prepare the cloth into separate pieces for sewing, that would be considered to be a constructive purpose. And there the ripping of the cloth would be a forbidden labor carrying the liabilities of the Torah for its infringement. But if the person just ripped a garment to shreds for no purpose, not in order to assuage their anger or to sew the pieces together, or let's say a person pulled down a building, a structure, not in order to build some other structure in its place, then here no positive purpose has been accomplished through this act of destruction. The person has simply spoiled something, destroyed something, and we do not make that person liable for the infringement of one of the forbidden labors of Shabbat because the labor did not have the intention of attaining the normal goal of that labor. Nevertheless, in such actions of destruction without any positive benefit coming from the action are normally forbidden through rabbinic ordinance. Well, now we come to another category of actions that will not qualify as melechet machsheva, the forbidden intentional labor of Shabbat. And this category would be those categories of action where the consequences of the action do not endure. Just as the sanctuary was erected in such a way that the effects of the labors involved would endure in the enduring sanctuary, likewise, those labors that are forbidden on Shabbat only carry a liability for their infringement if the effects of the labor endure. For example, if a person takes ink and writes on paper, the ink dries, the ink normally stays there. But if a person were to write letters with lightly colored water that is easily going to wash off and will not endure, then that is not considered to be the act of writing in the full sense of the word, which is one of the 39 forbidden labors. And the same applies to other labors of those 39 generic types. To make a person liable for the infringement of the Torah penalty, they would have to have done something that is going to endure, not something that is going to go out of existence some short time after the performance of the action. But nevertheless, there are cases here where even though if the labor does not endure, the person is exempt from the Torah penalty, it is still forbidden to carry out that action on the Shabbat. Well, another category of kinds of action that are not technically defined as melechet machshevet are those various actions that a person may carry out in the course of doing something different while it is not their actual intention to carry out the forbidden labor. For example, if somebody carries out even a complete melacha but without intention, in other words, if the person did not know at the time of the carrying out of the action that that was what they were doing. For example, if the person had in their pocket some item and they didn't know that it was in their pocket, they were unaware, they forgot that it was in the pocket, and they went out with that item in their pocket from the house, from the private domain, out into the public domain, out into the street. Even though a complete act of carrying out has been accomplished here, the person has not violated a Torah prohibition and they are not liable to a sin offering for this unwitting action. And this category of actions is called by the name in Hebrew of mitasek. The person is engaged in doing something and through their engagement in what they were doing, the malacha actually takes place, but they did not intend it to take place. The person was engaged in going out of the house. They were not aware there was an item in their pocket. They went out of the house and they carried it out. Normally carrying out intentionally is a malacha, a forbidden labor. But since they were doing this absent-mindedly, without intending that action, they're not liable to the Torah penalty. Nevertheless, also here our sages have instituted a prohibition, and for that reason a person must avoid coming to perform any act of forbidden labor, even if it is carried out without their full intention. Now, what if two people do an act of labor? A person is only liable to the Torah penalty for having carried out an act of labor if he does the entire action by himself or by herself. But if two people do that one labor together, in the case of a labor that each one of them would have been perfectly able to do by himself, or if one person did part of the labor and another person did another part of it, the two people are exempt. Nevertheless, they will have carried out a prohibition instituted by the rabbis not to perform forbidden labors, even with two people doing one and the same labor at one and the same time. Some examples here would be if two people carried out a small item that could easily be carried out by one person from the private domain, from the house, out into the street, or vice versa. Since two people were doing something that could equally have been done by one person, they are exempt because this is not the normal way of carrying out the labor. If two people required to take out something very heavy that is beyond the ability of one person to carry out, and the two people do it together, here they would be liable to the prohibition because the act of labor could only be done with two people. Another example of an act that involves two people that where the people who do it are exempt from the Torah penalty is the example that is brought at the very beginning of Tractate Shabbat of the Talmud, where the act of carrying out an item from one domain to another, from the private house out into the public domain, the street, or from the public domain, the street, into the private house, there are three parts to this labor. There is the uprooting of the item from the place where it was, the domain where it was, in other words, picking it up. There is the transfer of the item from domain to domain, across the threshold, from the house to the street or from the street to the house. And there is the letting down and placing the item in the new domain afterwards. Three aspects of the labor. Well, if one person is in his house and he picks up an item from inside the house and he puts it through the doorway or through the window, but he doesn't put it down in the street, in the public domain. Somebody else comes and takes it from his hand and puts it down in the street. Here, two people are involved in the one labor of carrying something out. The person inside the house who lifted up the object and put it through the door or the window, but he didn't complete the labor because he never put the object down in the street. It was somebody outside who took the object from him and put it down. So here, two people carried out a labor that could equally well have been done by the one person. It was not beyond his power to do the one act. And since two people were involved, they are technically exempt from the Torah penalty for carrying out from domain to domain. But nevertheless, this act is still forbidden through a rabbinic ordinance. Well, now we come to some other categories of actions that are not technically melachot. They're not technically forbidden labors of Shabbat that are forbidden through the Torah, but they are other categories of forbidden actions. One of them is called the shavut. A shavut is from the root of Shabbat, which means pausing, resting. And a shavut is one of the rabbinically ordained rules for not carrying out a whole variety of activities because they are inappropriate for the Shabbat. And the second category we'll be discussing in this section is called uvda d'chol, the action of a weekday. We are on Shabbos forbidden to do various things because they are too much like the way we do them on the weekdays. So there are very many activities that come under these categories. According to the strict letter of Torah law, they would be forbidden. But according to the strict letter of Torah law, many of these things would be permitted, whether because they are not identical to the labors that are forbidden, the 39 generic labors that were involved in the construction of the sanctuary, or because these actions are not carried out in the way that the labors were carried out in the sanctuary. These actions coming under these two categories of Shavuot, the rabbinically ordained things from which we abstain on Shabbat, and Uvda D'chol, weekday action, they don't come into the category of Melechet Machshevet, of intentional labor, but nevertheless our sages decreed against these activities on the Shabbat. And this is akin to all of the other commandments of the Torah, where the sages saw a need to add to the strict prohibitions of the Torah, the things that are prohibited by the strict law of the Torah, and they saw fit to add to these prohibitions in order to erect a protective fence around the commandment in question, so that the person should not come to transgress the Torah prohibition because they already held back from even getting near to the transgression of the Torah prohibition because the rabbis also prohibited actions that might bring them near to a Torah prohibition. So this is the case in the laws of Shabbat, where many times the sages saw a need to erect a further fence for the protection of the Shabbat, and they added prohibitions that are rabbinically ordained. And these prohibitions are called by this name of Shavuot. Maimonides in Nachmanides, Ramban, in his commentary on the Torah, on Exodus, on Leviticus chapter 23, verse 24, there brings a halachic midrash from the Mechilta that derives the whole concept of the Shavuot, the rabbinically ordained prohibitions of Shabbat, from a Torah root, where the Torah, in connection with the laws of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, in the book of Leviticus, uses the expression Shabbaton. Now, the word Shabbaton includes the letters of the word Shabbat. A Shabbaton is an intense form of resting from weekday labors, and all of the different festivals are compared one to another in the Torah, and likewise compared with the Shabbat, and Shabbat is compared with them. And when the Torah uses this expression of Shabbaton, a deep form of rest, the Torah is teaching us that besides our need to abstain from all of the 39 generic Malachot, the 49 forbidden acts of labor, the Shabbat must also be a day of rest and repose without unnecessary effort. And if we were to be permitted to all different kinds of activities, as long as they don't come into the technical category of forbidden malacha, the forbidden 39 generic labors, we would find ourselves being busy the whole Shabbos and every Yom Tov, every festival, and that would not be the day of rest and repose from our everyday labors and efforts. In most places where the sages want to teach us about something that is technically permittable according to the line of Torah law, but nevertheless which the sages have forbidden, they use in the halacha codes the expression patur, patur, exempt. A person who carries out such an action that is not technically in breach of one of the 39 forbidden labors would be exempt, patur, from the Torah penalty. Nevertheless, that action may be asur, may be forbidden through rabbinic enactment. Now, a rabbinic prohibition is something that we take very seriously. Even though the various rabbinic enactments and prohibitions are not explicitly stated in the written Torah, this does not mean that we can view them lightly. Nevertheless, those things that are forbidden through rabbinic enactment as opposed to Torah prohibition are in a different category and it's often necessary for us to know whether a particular action is forbidden through the law of the written Torah or whether it is a rabbinically enacted prohibition, because many times it may make a difference to us whether something is forbidden from the letter of the Torah law or through rabbinic enactment. Some examples of this would be in a case of danger. Now, there are various different levels of danger. Where there is a danger to life, we are permitted to transgress even something that is a Torah prohibition. Where a person's life is in danger, it is permitted to carry out all of the 39 labors that are necessary to save the person's life, because the Torah says that the laws of God are given for us to live by them and not to die by them. And therefore, for the sake of our living by the laws of the Torah, if something is happening that is a threat to somebody's life, it is permitted to breach one of the prohibitions of the Torah. But if we have a choice where there is a danger to life, and we could equally well save the person's life without breaching a Torah prohibition, but simply by breaching one of the rabbinically enacted prohibitions, if no time is going to be lost in saving the person's life by violating the rabbinic prohibition and observing the Torah prohibition, then we would, where possible, choose to transgress the rabbinic prohibition to save that person's life before we start transgressing the Torah prohibition. If there was no time to be lost and you have no time to ask or to think about it, then do whatever is necessary in order to save the person's life. But it is desirable to know what is prohibited through the letter of Torah law, the written Torah law, and what is prohibited through rabbinic enactment, in order to know what to do where there is a case of choice. So where it is possible to do a forbidden labor in a different manner from its normal way of being carried out, where one could accomplish the same end by doing the action backhandedly, for example, where there's only a prohibition instituted by the rabbis, one would choose to do the prohibited action in that manner where this is less stringent than violating a prohibition of the Torah. And likewise, there are things that not only are we Jews forbidden to carry out on Shabbat, we're also not allowed to tell a Gentile to do those actions on Shabbat. That is where the prohibition is in the written law of the Torah. But where the prohibition is rabbinically ordained, there are times when it may be permissible for the sake of a certain mitzvah or a positive consequence, it may be permissible to request a Gentile to perform the action if it is only prohibited from rabbinic enactment. Now, there are things which our sages forbade us to do on the Shabbat, not because of any infringement of the prohibition of labor on Shabbat intrinsically, but because the action is too similar to the way we might do certain things on a weekday. And if we do these things on Shabbat, it might seem as if we are looking down on the honor and respect that is due to the Shabbat. And we shall be covering examples of this in the course of the text of this book, The Concise Laws of Shabbat. Well, now, what are the Torah penalties for violating the Shabbat? When a person violates one of the Torah prohibited labors on Shabbat, if they did so unwittingly, they must bring a sin offering in the time when the temple is standing. If the person violated the Shabbat flagrantly and intentionally, and they were warned by witnesses that the act they're about to perform is prohibited by the Torah, it's a breach of the Shabbat, and the person went ahead and did the action, notwithstanding, the person would have to be brought to a Bet Din. This could only happen when the Sanhedrin is existing and judging cases, and only when the full legal apparatus of rabbinic law is reinstituted with the coming of Mashiach. The technical penalty for the flagrant breach of Shabbat, despite warnings from two valid witnesses, is for the person to be stoned, the most serious penalty of the Torah, which teaches us just how stringent is the Shabbat that the Torah has given such a severe penalty for its infringement. And if the person did not have a due warning and they were not brought to the rabbinic court for proceedings and possible execution, if those conditions did not exist but the act was still carried out flagrantly, the Torah penalty for such infringement is the penalty of karet, that means excision, the excision of the soul, where the person may die early and their soul will not have the benefit of the rewards and bliss of the world to come. Well, now, these are the penalties for willful infringement of the Shabbat, the penalty of stoning or karet, excision, for unwitting infringement of a Torah law of Shabbat, the obligation to bring a sin offering. And in the legal codes, there is discussion of the atonement that people can carry out in our time if they had transgressed the prohibitions of Shabbat, be they the prohibitions of Shabbat which derive from the written Torah or those prohibitions that derive from rabbinic enactment. Now, of course, these penalties will only apply if the person transgressed the Shabbat not in a place of danger. But if there is danger to life and in other cases danger even to our property in some cases, but certainly where there is a danger to life and the person transgresses the Shabbos to prevent that danger to life, not only has the person not carried out a prohibition, the person is considered to have performed a mitzvah by breaching the Shabbat for the sake of saving human life. This is considered to be a mitzvah. And in chapter 44, at the end of this work, we will study in detail what constitutes a danger to life and what may be done at that time to even breach the Shabbat for the sake of saving life. Finally, the last law that we shall cover in this class, which is the general introduction to the subject of the 39 forbidden labors of Shabbat, is that we must consider what is the status of those things that have been brought about through somebody's carrying out a forbidden labor on the Shabbat. Would it be permitted to eat food that had been cooked on the Shabbat in breach of the Shabbat law? Is it permissible on or after the Shabbat to have benefit from other breaches of the Shabbat laws? Well, there are things that are produced on the Shabbat through actions that are forbidden, that nevertheless it is permitted to have benefit from them. There are other things that may be brought about through carrying out a forbidden labor on Shabbat that it is forbidden to have benefit from them on that Shabbat. Sometimes something that was done on Shabbat may be forbidden to have use of also after the exit of the Shabbat on Saturday night. There are things that, if they were produced on the Shabbat, we might have to wait on Saturday night a length of time in which the forbidden action carried out on the Shabbat could have been carried out after Shabbat quite legally to produce that thing. There are some things that are produced on Shabbat that may be forbidden for benefit forever. Sometimes the products of somebody's act of forbidden labor on the Shabbat may be forbidden only to that person for whom the act was done, or that if they did it themselves. Sometimes the items produced on Shabbat are forbidden for other people, and the law can change depending on whether the person had violated a Torah prohibition, something in the written text of the Torah, or something that is forbidden through rabbinic enactment. The law may change depending on whether the person was unwitting in what they did, or whether they did it intentionally and flagrantly, whether it was done by a Gentile or is done by a Jew, whether it was done for the sake of somebody who was sick. In each of these different cases, the law may change, and one cannot and may not try to derive the law in one case from something that may appear to be similar in another case. The only way to get an accurate information about the specific law on Shabbat is by asking a qualified rabbi a question about the specific act that was carried out. And in the course of the continuation of our study of this work, we shall be looking at some of these distinctions between the various things that were done on Shabbat in violation of the law. With that, we complete chapter 5 of Kitzur Hilchot Shabbat, the concise laws of Shabbat. And in the coming chapters, we will be entering into a detailed exploration of each one of the 39 forbidden labors of Shabbat. I have called these 39 forbidden labors that are forbidden through the institution of the written Torah. Even though they are not written explicitly in the Torah, they can all be learned out from the verses of the Torah and by making logical inferences from what is written in the Torah about the construction of the sanctuary. And for that reason, these 39 labors are called prohibitions of Shabbat mi de'oraiso. Oraiso is the Aramaic term for the Torah, oraiso. And those things which have bitten on the Shabbat, midoraiso, from the strict letter of Torah law and all the inferences that can be made from the written text of the Torah, these are the 39 forbidden labors. And the other things that are forbidden on the Shabbat through rabbinic ordinance are called the shevutim, the various forms of rest and repose that the sages have ordained for the Shabbat. And with this, we conclude this class.